It's Lake Effect from Milwaukee Public Radio. The fall semester has all but wrapped up at colleges and universities around Wisconsin. UWM holds its fall commencement next weekend, and students head home or elsewhere for winter breaks before returning for January or spring terms after the first of the year.
At UW-Milwaukee, one unusual class is being offered in the spring. It's called The Art of Being Still. It's a course that many of us could use as we're constantly checking social media accounts or sending text messages or are otherwise occupied for a larger and larger portion of our days.
The course is being taught by Aaron Maris, who owns a fitness facility in Mequon called E2 and who teaches a variety of classes which make the mind-body connection. So in the middle of a busy holiday season, we invited her to stop by the studio to explain where many of us are such that we need to work on being still.
I think a really great self-assessment is to ask yourself if you've taken a deep breath today. So a lot of times when people come into my studio, they'll come into E2 and they'll be rushing in from a day of doing what they do. And they come to their mat and it might be the first time that they've taken in the breath of, and that has huge health ramifications in the mind and the body. I would say that everybody needs to take a moment to find something that reconnects them to themselves. And the breath is the quickest way there.
Well, and it's funny because, you know, there's a cliche that just goes, okay, take a deep breath and then, you know, X, Y, or Z. But there really is something to that.
Oh my gosh, there's science to it. So you have these teachers, you know, from thousands and thousands and thousands of years ago that we have all this information about how the gut is related directly to the brain, right? Gut health, brain. And they discovered that thousands and thousands of years ago. Now we're finally saying in Western medicine that, yeah, your gut's unhealthy, your brain's going to suffer, right? So, or you've heard of that expression, I felt it in my gut. So in Sanskrit, it's Manipura. It's this place, this chakra, this energy. So when we're feeling stress, we often feel that anxiety right here, right in the chest and below the chest, diaphragm. When we take a deep breath through the nose, our body does something miraculous. It creates a chemical reaction. It creates nitric oxide, NO. And that goes straight into the brain. And it tells the system, hey, everything's okay. Parasympathetic nervous system, everything's okay. But when we are shallow breathers and we're not in touch with our breath and we're letting our levels of stress creep up to a point where we're actually holding our breath, we're denying ourselves the nutrition and the circulation that's necessary to keep the organs, the soft tissue, our brain, our entire being kind of feeling like everything's okay and getting its full source of oxygen. And that has many ramifications in the world of health.
Well, and it seems silly, but at the risk of diminishing what you do, being able to teach someone to breathe deeply is a really, really, really basic thing.
Yeah, we call it diaphragmatic breathing. In Sanskrit, it's dirgha breath. It means three-part breath. And what we're learning to do is to find the alignment in the neutral spine, which also Joseph Pilates taught as one of his core principles in Pilates. Everything coming off of the conduit of the way the nerves travel through the body. So it just makes sense. It's like the superhighway. And when there's bumps and roadblocks and it's traveling pretty fast, pretty uncomfortable, right? I guess that's one way of looking at it. But when you sit up tall, right? So here we go.
Oh, so. I feel guilty already, so okay. Guilty as charged.
We're adjusting in our seats. So we sit up tall, and all of a sudden, what happened is we release the pressure of that forward fold, which so much of our posture is headed that way from looking at technology, right? We're looking down into our texts, into our computers. But when we sit up tall, all of a sudden, the diaphragm can move the way it's supposed to, and we're able to do this full three-part breath that I was talking about, this dirgha breath. And it's settling, and it's calming, and it's science. So you let the belly inflate, you breathe 360 degrees up into the rib basket, and you broaden the spaces between those ribs, where they connect into the spine, where they connect into the sternum, all the way up to the collarbones. And then you release, release, release. And just one of those breaths has profound effects on our level of anxiety, just diminishing it.
Is there something particularly urgent about doing this in a setting like a college campus?
Absolutely. Absolutely. We have moved into a time in our culture where we have multiple stimuli. We're processing. We're processing things that we're walking by. We're processing things on our phone. We're processing just frontal lobe activity of, I have to do this. Oh, my gosh, I didn't let the dog out. Oh, Susie wanted me to drop that paper off. Yeah, all the time. I left that candle burning. Oh, my gosh.
That's nicely analog, though.
Yeah, right. We have a lot happening, and with technology, even more so. And what it's doing is it's causing many health problems. One of the physical health problems that's happening is the forward flexion in the neck. And we're seeing arthritis in a generation that's probably 30 years ahead of their time, just from being in a constant state of forward flexion. We're seeing degeneration in the spine. We're seeing different kinds of arthritis in areas that, in thumbs, opposable digits.
I shouldn't laugh, but it's very obvious if you think about it. Yeah,
bend, and I say straighten those thumbs out, and they don't on a lot of students, some adults too. But what it's doing to the mind is that we're creating these patterns, and what we learn in meditation right away is we are not our thoughts.
And what do you mean by that?
Yeah. So we come to the planet, pretty clean slate. About a year and a half old, we start understanding, maybe even before then, that, hey, my name's Mitch. Hey, my name's Aaron. And we start associating things with that name. Oh, I did that really well. Oh, they like it when I do that. Aaron's good at this. Aaron's not good at that. Aaron's this, Aaron's that. We put all these labels on the outside of it. And these are all thoughts that we've chosen to attach to. So this idea of we are not our thoughts is that a study was done on the average, how many thoughts do we have in a day, right? And I think it was something like 64,000 thoughts the average person has in a day. And out of all those thoughts, almost all of them are redundant. So how do we make room in our mind for creativity? How do we make room in our mind to just meander about if it's so full of something that isn't actually even serving us? It's just a redundancy. So are we those thoughts? Are we the thought of, what did I eat today? Did I talk to so-and-so? Well, you know, we all can relate to it, right? So when we meditate, we actually observe the thoughts and move into a place of stillness, which is really difficult for people that don't sit still at first, because when we sit still, the noise becomes very loud. And to sit with all of that initially can be overwhelming. Some people can't even sit in the stillness of it at first, and there's room in the back for standing. So as we start to recognize how full our minds are of things that we may not even want to have there anymore, it gives us a chance to do some spring house cleaning. It gives us a chance to make a little bit of room in the mind and not attach to thoughts that no longer serve us.
At the heart of this, what you're describing is really just the idea of mindfulness, right?
Yeah, mindfulness, that when you're in that breath and you carry in the sensations and you feel the sensation of the breath entering, there isn't room to be in the past and there isn't room to be in the future. In the past, going over maybe what mistakes you've made, over what you liked or didn't like, or in the future, dreaming about what's to come or stressing over what's to come. But in the present moment, there's just that present moment. And there's a great calm and peace that I think is something that we're designed to be in. But we use distraction to take us away from that present moment.
Well, and it's interesting because you're talking about the younger generation and how people are showing up with arthritis 30 years before you might expect it in their necks or in their thumbs or what have you. And what's interesting about the younger generation, this is a generation that has only known this technology since they were little.
Yeah, and I think interestingly enough that if we look back over history, we watch the curve, we watch it going up and going up. We're like, when is that gonna tip? Where's the tipping point, right? And I think I'm pretty excited because I think we're getting close to a tipping point. I think this generation is really brilliant. I think they're amazing, and I think they are really questioning, what do I want to do with my life different from the generation before me and the generation before them? What's meaningful to me? And they're finding that this generation, right, coming up really is very much about experiences. And that's exciting.
Absolutely. You teach this in this bigger sphere of other kinds of disciplines, whether it's yoga or Pilates or the more active things like kickboxing or those sorts of things. How does mindfulness connect to all those various things?
I love that question.
It's easy, I guess, to imagine how it works with yoga, but where does it show up in these other things that we think of as sort of less still?
I most recently had a young man come live with us, with our family. He had finished his baseball career in college and had finished it on kind of a bummer note. He had gotten mono at the end of his season, and he wasn't able to really participate at a time when he thought scouts would be coming to watch him. He has a decent arm, but a wandering mind. And in sports, in performance, in elite athletes, you can't have a wandering mind. You need to be in the moment. We call it in the zone. So you talk about being in your element, in your zone, when you're sitting with your headset on, Mitch, and you're in front of the mic, and how it's just, you're there. It's that way in every activity, whether you're an athlete, whether you're a parent, just pick anything. It's that zen of just being in that moment. Because if we're not in our moment and we're in the past by a nanosecond or in the future by a nanosecond, we're missing what's right in front of us. And I think we can all relate to that. If we're talking to somebody and we're thinking about a question we want to ask them, we're missing the nuances of what that person is sharing with us. And it's an amazing thing when you can be completely present in front of someone. You can have that eye contact. You can take in all of the stimuli of what that person's sharing. And so it changes the most basic relationships.
How closely related in sports is this to the idea of flow?
It is. So there's what's trending in the sports world, right? Yoga, big time, with all of our pro athletes, and Pilates, and bar. but all of those, excuse me. Seriously, though, you have these big athletes standing at a ballet bar, or never having been in a yoga studio. You have athletes that are solo, these tennis players, these dancers, these figure skaters, and they're out there by themselves. And what can make everything go wrong and what can make everything go right is right between their ears. So the flow comes from getting out of your thoughts. Being able to visualize and use the power of the mind to set up the framework for what's about to happen, for instance, pitching a baseball. See it and throw it. You go into that free space where the pitch that you just threw that you may not have liked becomes a thing of the past. You move into the present and you don't take that with you into the next pitch. You're able to really reset. So in anything, I just was just watching figure skating at my mom's house this weekend. And it's amazing how an athlete has an error in their performance. And there are subsequent errors after it because they weren't able to clear. So this mindfulness in sports is such an incredible field that's coming up, sports psychology, and using the mindfulness training to get out of your own way and let your body do what you've trained it to do.
You actually, one of the things I gather that you do is sort of take people there, if you will.
Yeah.
Can you talk about how you do that? And I know you're going to give us an example that will give people a chance to use for themselves on our website. But talk a little bit about the idea of guided meditation.
I like to engage people in a place that they're comfortable in. So I let them create that themselves in some of the guided meditations. For instance, you can take a journey. You can put yourself with the power of visualization in a place that you love, that makes you feel safe, that makes you feel comfortable. And then the guided part is to help the meditator to create it. So using the sense of smell, what did it smell like there? You know, when you're sitting in the swing in your backyard of your childhood, you know, that was a good place. Whatever it is, that place on the beach or under the tall trees and the canopy, to create it using visual, even though the eyes are closed, to use even the feel of it, the taste of it, the taste of the air if you're by the ocean, you know? And once you begin to create that place, to move into it and breathe into it and be in that place. And there's a lot of benefit that can come in that type of guided meditation.
Do you think doing this makes it easier to have those moments during the day when you can clear the mechanism? Because obviously a baseball pitcher or someone who's sitting there in traffic isn't necessarily going to turn everything off. They still have to be able to react to the stimuli around them. But does developing these skills in a meditative way make it easier to reach those states of flow the rest of the day?
I absolutely believe, yeah. There are so many studies by Western medicine, just all different, Mayo Clinic studies, clinical psychology studies, Stanford, Harvard, just all the big ticket schools you can think of out there, studies all the way down to these wonderful smaller entities, even our military, huge million dollars put into how meditation helps soldiers with PTSD. So your question being, what and how does practicing it on the mat or practicing it, how does that apply to time off the mat or time out of your meditation sanctuary that you build?
Yeah, absolutely.
You can do it anywhere. You can use your breathing technique sitting in traffic, and you can calm yourself down instantly. Because what we develop in our discipline of meditation is the ability to be non-reactive. And what our society teaches us and what we learn in our culture is reactivity often. And reactivity causes many physiological
nice
chain
way
reactions,
to put it.
Right? So as we learn to sit still, we learn to find a kindness that we're kind to ourselves. We're slowing down and taking time to be present for ourselves. And in that place, we develop compassion to self, kindness to self. And from that grows a joy and a sensation that, hey, things aren't so bad. And that's definitely something that we can still be engaged in activities and use our breathing techniques that we learn in meditation to bring ourselves to a place where we actually share some good light.
Erin Maris owns E2 Fitness in Mequon, and she teaches everything from kickboxing to yoga. She'll also teach a course at UW-Milwaukee's College of Health Sciences in the spring called The Art of Being Still.
Maris recorded a couple of guided meditations for beginners for us, and you can find them, and you can hear more interviews like this one by visiting the Lake Effect page at WUWM.com.